matches with Aero. Thought you'd do the tour away Manchester.
Morning. Thank you for listening. In last week's parsha, there's a phrase which is used. Moshe Rabbeinu is interfering in the machlokes fight between Dothan and Aviram, and he was challenged. Who's appointed you? Who asked you to interfere? Halar geniata oimeu. Are you saying you're going to kill me? Halagini ata oimer. So Rashi says, what's halagini ata oimer? A particular turn of phrase. Rashi says, it was a reference to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had previously killed the Mitzri b'shem hamafirosh. Now Moshe Rabbeinu had previously killed a Mitzri. He saw a Mitzri hitting a Yid and he killed him. How did he kill him? The Pasuk says, v'yachas hamitzri. But Rashi says, he used the power of speech, used the Shem HaFeresh, by invoking the Shem HaFeresh, he killed him. And there's an interesting discussion I saw in the Stipler, which discusses the responsibility of a person through saying something, or through being mekallel somebody, would that make him responsible for his actions? Interesting, he quotes a Hilchos Ketanos, who says, someone who kills someone by Shem HaFeresh, or using Kishuf, is Chayav Miso. But the Stipler is troubled, because those who are doing Dafayemi Brochus will know there's a Gemara in Brochus, beginning of Brochus, Rav Shimon ben Levi was given particular problems by some fellow, was shepherding him, and Rav Shimon ben Levi had a patent where he could work out that instant of the day when Rav Shimon is Bekas, and he was wanted to give the Tzedoki, this fellow, he wanted to give him a klala at that instant. He fell asleep, and one says, it's inappropriate to behave like that. Racham aval kol ma'asov, not safe for a tzad to be manish. But the question is, would, if a person is chayav misa for such an action, this fellow wasn't chayav misa l'chayra. So, how did I have to kill him? So the Stipler there actually makes a distinction. It says, using a shem hamafirush, or using kishuv, is something which directly kills a person. You're using a sword. You're using a knife. My knife isn't a physical knife. When you give a klala to somebody, you're not actually doing anything. It may happen, it may not happen. You're giving it over to Shomayim. If Shomayim approve, they will act upon that. So it's consequential. Tosfos says you want chayav misa. It's a din of who? There he was chayav misa. Yeah, but in the case of the Gemara Brochus, the stoki wasn't. Let me read it. Like Marin. But you're not allowed to kill him, you're dying. Okay. So, I call upon him, there's a difference between a speech which causes damage directly and something which is indirect. And it has tremendous ramifications on a practical level. So, I came across a case recently, which is Maisim B'chol Yoim. Two people are looking to do a deal on a property. Somebody's buying, there's a purchaser and a vendor. And they're holding at a stage, let's make it simple, there was no exchange of contracts. They were going to do a simultaneous exchange and completion, so there's nothing being binding. Without getting into the separate discussion, what the ramifications are, exchange of contracts in halacha, and the consequences and penalties of backing out of that are. That's a separate discussion itself. There was no, talking about a case, they had a deal set up, they got an agreement in principle, but everything's going ahead as terms, and just before the deal is supposed to go through, the exchange and the commission is supposed to take place, a day or two before, the vendor backs out. And the purchaser says, well, you know, at this stage, I've incurred tremendous costs. It was the case that I came across was a property in London, and the purchaser was making a claim against the vendor for £20,000 of costs. I had to apply for a mortgage, I had the survey done, I had paid a mortgage broker, I had drawn down the mortgage. It was a whole list of things you had, accruing to £20,000 in loss as a result of the deal being backed out in the last minute. Normally we know, when we're dealing with the Hilchos Nezikin, between two people, there's a klal of Olam HaMazik, there's Chayef. There's a klal, Groma is Potter. That means those things which I damage a person directly, his momentous, his assets, his finances, then I'm responsible for. Those things which I don't do directly, but as a consequence of my actions, someone suffers a loss, I'm not responsible for. That doesn't mean you're allowed to do it. It doesn't mean it's a correct thing to do. It's also to do it. But it means in the Hilchos Halachos of Bezdin cannot be mechayev a person compensation for losses which he suffered as a consequence of someone's actions.
Even if he tells him French, Heinz lists
up conflict. Well, let's go through that. So, there are, however, a number of great areas in between. There's Mazik, there's Groma, and there's areas known which are Garmi. And we'll discuss different examples. So Garmi are something which is more direct than a Groma, but not necessarily completely direct to be classed as a Mazik. Yeah. So an example of Groma would be, there's a case brought in the Chuvas HaRashbo. Somebody approached a fellow to hire a storage place. There happened to be a boy who wanted to store his grain. And the storage place had a hole in it. And as a result of that, the grain got damaged, spoiled. He hired the place off him, put his grain in there, and all the grain spoiled. Because it really wasn't suitable for storing grain. Says the Rashba, you're not chayef for the losses of the grain. Why? Because he did not directly damage the grain. He didn't touch the grain. He told him, what did he do? He told him, this is a place which is suitable for grain. When he told him that, there was no damage sustained at all. The damage only comes later on as a result of the person now hiring this storage room, putting all his grain in there, and then later on, it gets damaged. Something which happens later on as a result of what I told you, says the Rashba, that's a groma, and you're not responsible for that.
Why can't you say it's not suitable to store grain?
So it may not be suitable for grain, so you may be a mekach tois, so therefore you may get his money back, which he paid. But we're not talking about it. He had a tremendous storage of grain, it was tremendous, or spoil, much more than the rental that he had paid. I also came across a similar, a contemporary case of that. A person taken a managing agent in Torah. He had the property which was suffering from damp. Well, the managing agent said it wasn't damp, it was condensation. But practically speaking, the usage of that particular flat in normal usage resulted in there being tremendous mold mildew, whatever it is, in the flat. As a result of that, some of his things got spoilt. As a result of that, perhaps someone in his family developed asthma, and he made a claim against the managing agent. L'chayr, this is mamash the same case as the Rashba. Somebody who rented the apartment is not suitable for its use. The loss is sustained later. The Rashba classifies that as a groma. However, there are a number of cases where we are mechayev a person as a result of what they said. The financial losses that come later on as a result of that, we say, you said that, you caused that, you're responsible for that. And I have to say, it is a very big topic. There are steers, contradictions. I mean, some cases everyone agrees you're potter, some cases everyone agrees you're chayev, some cases are machlokes, and there's a question of how to reconcile all these different cases. And it's not without its complications, but it's certainly of interest, and it certainly has relevance, the practical halacha. So, if you want to see some of the cases, one of the cases, one of the famous cases is called Marad Dirne El Shulchani. Someone requests, pays a professional to assess the integrity of a coin. And the Pella tells him the coin is good, and he accepts that as a payment in return of someone's offering him to pay back his debt, and as a result of that, he no longer can claim his debt, and it turns out that the coin is no longer valid. And the one that says, the Shulchani, the person who gave that professional advice, is responsible. And that is classed as a garmi. And the Rishonim already struggle. How do you classify that? And this definitely gives rise to the cases of professional negligence. A lawyer, a solicitor, an accountant, someone who misinforms his client, he misadvises the client, would the appropriate head of claim to make against that professional would come under Mara Dino Leshulchoni. So that's one instance. However, there are cases which are not regarding a professional negligence. So we have, for example, a case, the Ramo in Choshen Mishpot, Simen Yod Dalet, Hilchus Dayanim. Two people are having a dispute. And one says to his friend, go over there, there's a bezin in that town over there, go there, I'll come after you, and we'll have a Torah and we'll resolve the dispute. His friend goes, and obviously the first guy doesn't follow. So, Leich v'ani ovei acharecho, says the Ramo, you're required to compensate it for the expenditure that he's had to go there. Now obviously, maybe not so obvious, but Lemaisa, there's a measure of a reasonless. That means as follows. I told you to go to London, we're going to have it in London, travel to London, and I don't turn up. So he comes along and says, okay, fine, how much was the train ticket? So, well, actually, I always travel first class. Yeah? So, okay, so I spend a first class ticket. No, not responsible to pay for his first class ticket. You're responsible to pay for the normal expenditure that one would expect somebody to pay to go to London. So a train ticket might be reasonable. It's going to be very relevant. And Choshen Mishpot, Simeshin Lama Gimel, Hilchas Chiras Poyalim, the halachas which relates to employer-employee. Someone says to somebody, make me a kli, v'ani egne mimcho. So, the halacha Shulchan Aruch is that an agreement where you instruct somebody to do something on their own, on their own schayra, on their own merchandise, and you say that afterwards I'm going to buy it off you, is not an employer-employee relationship. That means it's not governed by Hilchos Chiras Poyalim, according to most poskim. Why? Because I'm not asking you to do a job for me. I've told you, if you make a pair of shoes, I will buy it off you. But I'm not employing you to make those pair of shoes. I've said to you, if you make X, Y, and Z, I'll buy it off you.
Did you say this?
Yeah. Yeah. And he made it. Yeah. Obviously, if you don't make it, he's not going to buy it off him. Right? So he made it. So now, it's not governed by... So nafgamina will be, for example, there's no din of Baal Tolin. You have to pay your employee on the same day that he does work for you. That's if he's your employee. Here, you're not ending the employee-employee relationship. So now, what happens? He makes a pair of shoes. He says, okay, here's a pair of shoes. Now buy it off me. Says the Shulchan Aruch, based on the Tshuvas HaRosh, that if you don't buy it off him, you mechuyev to pay him all his expenditure that he's had, the loss that you caused him by telling him, all you've done is, you said to him, you'll buy it off him, and now you're backing down. So it's mamash Hashem al tasek. I'm not doing what I said I'm going to do. There's nothing really binding. You don't have to buy it off him. He can't force you to buy it off him, but you're going to have to compensate him for the damages, for the losses that he sustained, the expenditure that he's had, going through making that pair of shoes for you because you instructed him to do so. So, what have you done? You've spoken. You said something. And after we came, that's mechayev you to compensate him for the losses that he's had as a result of following your instructions.
Why is that different than the person that says you can put your grain in my beautiful storehouse, perfect, and then you rent and it's damp and it's wet and it destroys all the grain? That's wrong. Whereas this is Jeremy, I can't quite work out.
Right, okay. But perhaps, hopefully at the end of the shiur will be a bit clearer. Now there is another case, which is a machlokes in the Rishonim, and that's really used by a lot of the Gedolei Achronim as a starting point to work out what are the Gedorim and how do we delineate which cases are responsible and which cases are not responsible for. So in Hilchos Zechiya Umatono, Perik Vov, Halacha Chof Dalet, the Rambam says a person is engaged to a woman. Oros, not really accurate in translation. Engagement is not really translated. He's an oros and aruso. And he prepares the suda, kaminuk, that the normal oros prepares the suda for an aruso. And then she backs out. Chosroi is chayeves. She's mechuyev to pay him for everything, for all his expenditure, for everything he spent on the food, on the chazonim, everything he's mechuyev to pay.
For the chasna or for the aruso?
The engagement. No. For what he's prepared. For what he's prepared, he's mechuyev to pay. Says the Ravid, Omer Avrom, nay, not masking. Why? What's the difference between this case and someone sells Zaroine Gino? He sells grain to be planted, Zaroine Gino, and the person goes and plants them. They don't grow, they're faulty. He's not required to reimburse him for the hefsed that he sustained, for his hoitzois. So, we have a bachleikus, Rambam, and Ravid, in the case of the person backs out from the shidduch, the woman backs out from the shidduch, is she required to compensate him? The Rambam says yes, and that actually I have with Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Eben Ezer, Simenon Hilchos Kiddushin, Paskins that you're responsible, and the Ravid says no, it can't be. Because by Zaroine Gino, they are not required to compensate him for his losses as a result. In fact, you told him these are good grain. You told him these are suitable for planting. He went and he hired workers and he did, I don't know what he did. He hired a field so he could plant. And you're not required to reimburse him for those losses. Says, right, so if so, we see just because you told him that it's good grain, no. So just because she said she's going to go ahead with the shidduch, you can't be mechayev. And various tirutzim are said on the Rambam to explain how will the Rambam deal with the Ravid's kashas, and they all have a tremendous impact. So, the Magen Mishnah is one of the classical mefoshim on the Rambam. He gives a teretz, and it's not necessarily the easiest teretz to understand, but it's quoted by the Gedolei Achronim, and they seem to work along those lines. So, Magen Mishnah says that Zaroine Gino, a person is given the faulty goods, and now he's trying to make money and invest and make more money with these goods, and as a result of trying to make more money, to make a profit, L'harviach, he invests money into those goods and to try and get a profit, so that the seller is not responsible for. When you have an oros, an arusa, and he's acting according to the minhag hamedina, he's acting according to the regular minhag, this is the normal minhag, then that you're responsible for. But the fact that somebody else is trying to make more money, trying to make a profit out of what I have supplied them for, that the Rambam is moida, you're not responsible for.
Even though it's a normal minhag. Even though it's a normal minhag to behave that way with these seeds.
To plant, yeah. It seems like that. There are those that wish to suggest that Zaroine Gino is talking about a case where the seller was unaware of the fault. He supplied faulty goods in good faith, not being aware that there was a problem with them. And in fact, Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Reish number base, Paskins, someone supplies faulty grain to somebody else, knowing that the grain is faulty, so then he is required, and the person told him, as a double condition, knowing that the grain is faulty, and the person said, you know, I'm going to be taking the grain up north, down south, to plant them, so then you are responsible to pay him for the costs that he had to schlep them to wherever he was going to schlep them. Why? Because A, you knew that they were faulty when you supplied them. B, you were aware that this was the intended use. It was an intended expenditure. So therefore, you are required to. Now, it obviously, there's still needs to be reconciled here. Why? Because the Rambam, who's Mechayev, by the Oros backing out, is Lechayev talking about even a case where she acted in good faith. That means there was a reason why originally she intended to go ahead with the shul. She wasn't stringing the fellow along. And then they had a reason why she backed out. Doesn't matter. You'll still be responsible. Yeah? You can't compare it to the case of grain where the supplier knowingly supplied from the beginning of the transaction. He was acting in a way which he knew he was not completing the deal. Could be he was acting in good faith. Could be he intended to come and take part in resolving the dispute, and for one reason or another he was unable to come. But nonetheless, it's mashma still be chayev. So there is a tshuva of Rabbi Kiva Eger. Rabbi Kiva Eger discusses. Rabbi Kiva Eger discusses a case where Rabbi Kiva Eger discusses a case where somebody asked they were merchants who were suppliers of dried fruits, and they brought goods from one place to another and they sold them, and the purchasers backed out. So the purchasers backed out, and they wrote to and the vendors wrote to Rabbi Kiva Eger asking them if the purchasers are entitled to back out given the structure of the deal there. Most of the tshuva deals with Dov Shalei B'lo Ilam. However, at the end of the tshuva he says as follows: I understand from your question that there was a transport of the goods from one place to another. In which case, there are grounds to say, make a claim for the reimbursement of those costs. Now he says that it would appear, perhaps, so to say, that the point whether you can claim reimbursement for those costs is going to be subject to the machlokes of the Rambam and the Ravid. The Rambam says you're entitled to get reimbursed for costs as a result of expenditure that you made based on what someone else was telling you. And the Ravid says, no, that will be compared to Zaroi Negina. So, so this might be subject to that point. And then Rabbi Kiva Eger says, no. Rabbi Kiva Eger says a principle as follows. He says, we've got a clash on the Rambam. We've got the Teretz of the Magen Mishnah. Magen Mishnah says that the Rambam does not require you to reimburse someone else for their profits. But we're still left with unanswered questions. We still don't understand the halacha of Lech Vani Yavayacharecho. You're required to reimburse him. We don't understand the halacha of you tell a poil, make a kli, and I'll buy it off you. And you back out from the deal. You have to reimburse him. How do you understand those halachas? Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, a principle. And he says as follows. That where a person instructs somebody else to spend the money, then he becomes responsible for that instruction. So he says as follows. If you tell somebody, Leich vani avoy achrecho, you're telling him, go there. To tell a person to travel to that place requires expenditure. So implied in your instruction is, spend money to go to wherever. It's not implied, you can't imply, okay, to spend the first class ticket. So, if you told him to spend money on your instruction, so that instruction to spend money is what's going to make you responsible. If you tell him, make me something, make me a pair of shoes, make me a bookcase, so then you've instructed him on the expenditure. He has got to get goods, he's got to get material, he has to spend time. You've instructed him to undertake that expenditure, and you're going to reimburse him for it. That's part of what you said. I undertake, expend money, and I undertake to fulfill the reimbursement of those monies. Then, says Rabbi Eger, even the rival will be moida. Even the rival who says, by Shiduchim, or by Zorah Yegino, those are cases where there's been no instruction spent. I'm sending you these goods. They're suitable for planting. I'm not telling you to plant them. You can decide what you want to do. You might want to resell them. Once I sold them, the transaction between us is finished. I'm not telling you what to do. Yeah. The Oros Aruso, I didn't tell you to go prepare a suda. You did it. Fine. The Rambam might hold that he was required to do it. Say that the minhag requires him to do it. But I never told you, I never gave you an instruction on that. But when I give instruction to do something, then you will not be responsible. Then you will be responsible, even according to the Ravid. Therefore, in the case of Rabbi Eger, he says the instruction to transport the goods from one end of the country to the other end of the country is an instruction to spend money. And that instruction to spend money, and you said, I'm going to buy it off, it means I will compensate you. Yes, you can undertake those expenditure, and I will compensate you for it, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, that will make you responsible. Now, there's one more principle, which is relevant, and then we can go back to an analysis of how it plays out in contemporary situations. The final principle that I want to bring is a marik. A marik is brought in, again, in Hilchos, where a person undertakes to act on behalf of a friend of his in a business capacity, something which is going to facilitate his friend to do a business. He's going to act on his behalf. He maybe has connections, maybe he has abilities to get contracts. I don't know what it is, but it says he's going to facilitate to act on his behalf. It doesn't say as an agent. It's going to facilitate the business, a business transaction, a business venture, and based on that agreement, he's going to do it for no charge. Based on that agreement, his friend goes and invests money into the infrastructure of his business. And then, the fellow who's supposed to be the facilitator backs out. And says, you can't back out of me now. Yeah, I've gone and I've bought a shop front and this and that and that. What am I going to do now? I can't get this deal. I can't get this business going without you. Yeah, I've invested all this money in the business. If you back out now, it's all going to fold. I'm going to lose all the money. Says the Marik that the gentleman is not mechuyev to reimburse him for the costs. Now, there is a machloikus, how to understand the Marik, what the principle of the Marik is. But there are those that say the fellow's entitled to back out to do it for nothing and he's entitled to charge for it then. Since this is something which is normally a service which is charged for, so the fact that he was doing it for free until now is not machayev him to continue doing it for free, and as long as he's willing to do it and carry on and act for payment, he's not responsible. But others, the Nesivus, Machai Ephraim, understand that Peshat the Marikis, he says he no longer wishes to act on his behalf at all. You're not going to act for payment. You're not going to do it. You're not interested. And the reason is, so the wording of the Marik is that a person should understand that he never said, I'm not going to back out. He was never Machai himself to continue doing this. He never told him, I'm going to continue it. It's a normal thing. He said, I'm doing it for free. Okay, when it's convenient, he'll do it. And when it's inconvenient, he's going to back out. There was never any intention of him necessarily going all the way. So, and that's extended by other poskim to similar cases. A person agrees to do something. The other person, based on that, goes and spends costs. And then the first person backs out. So no, because it was understood the person is doing it as long as they're happy to do it. But they retain the right still to back out. So we've seen a number of cases, a number of principles. If we return back to the Shaila, this question of the fellow who was supposed to buy the property, and the vendor backed out in the last minute, and the purchaser was left with the costs, the mortgage application costs, the surveying costs, the mortgage broker costs. So, for example, in that case, the property was at 1.2 million, 1.3 million, a house in London, and the mortgage was supposed to be like £1 million. So, one of the costs he put in for claim for, he said he paid his mortgage broker a 1% fee, is £10,000. So the vendor says, okay, it's true I knew you applied for a mortgage, but there's many different ways of applying for a mortgage. You can go to a mortgage broker who takes a flat fee. You can go to a mortgage broker who doesn't take any fee to get the money from the bank. Yeah? I didn't necessarily say, understand, I had no idea that you were going to a mortgage broker who takes a 1% fee on £1 million mortgage, £10,000. So that lechera is similar to the time that we said, Baleich vani ovayacharecho. Yes, I told you to have that expenditure. And it might be argued that in this case as well, there's an implied instruction. When you're doing a deal with somebody, you're selling a property to somebody, and you are aware that that person is financing the property through a mortgage, that you're giving him instructions to take on the normal expenditure for a mortgage. So a mortgage application fee, a survey fee. But to pay the 1% broker to the 1% fee to a broker would be like saying, the fellow saying, I didn't know that you normally travel first class. Yes, I told you to go to London for the Torah. I didn't tell you to travel first class. Yeah? I didn't tell you to take a 1% broker. A broker takes 1%. Fine. So, you have? Let's clarify it here. We're saying, Rabbi Akiva Eger says that when you give an instruction to someone to have expenditure, you become responsible for that expenditure. We have to understand, though, what expenditure was he instructed for? So, the expenditure that's normal and reasonable and that can be assumed that he's going to do would be included under that. But then we also have the principle of the Marik. The Marik says that all these cases, if you want to be mechayev somebody, that's all dependent on the fact when the person said clearly that he's not going to back out. Right? So, if the person says, which as one normally does, this is subject to contract. What do the words subject to contract mean? So, subject to contract, people may not know this, is a legal term, which means until there is a contract, either party is free to back out. Which means any risk that you take until then is under your own responsibility. You want to be ensured that the deal is going to go through because you want to ensure yourself against loss of your expenditure, so make sure you've exchanged contracts. Yeah? Make sure you have something binding in place. Now, you may argue, okay, I didn't know that, I thought you meant... So first of all, that's irrelevant. What? You break the contract is a separate share. What happens? Compensation for breaking a contract is a separate share. But until you make that contract, the subject of the contract, you're under the defense, you have the defense of the Marik. The Marik says that you're not responsible when it's understood that you may still back out. So by saying something to the contrary, you're effectively saying, I may still back out, and you may still back out. Now, in this instance, the person dealing with the property actually was a solicitor, and he spoke out, the vendor spoke out to the purchaser. You should know this is subject to contract, and you should know that this means that you are free to back out, and I am free to back out, and therefore any risk or any expenditure that you spend now is going to be your responsibility and not mine. So he clearly was not undertaking to indemnify him against the losses of his expenditure as per his instructions. Now, this is one more point, and that is, before we finish off, and that is, this is all assuming the vendor acted in good faith. The vendor wasn't stringing him along, put up his property on the market just to see how much he could get for his property, and to see whether somebody would really go through it at that price. He intended to sell the property, and then for one reason or another, it didn't work out for him. His next property fell through, or whatever it was, family circumstances changed. So he then backed out. But had he been acting deliberately misleading him, then we would have to examine whether that falls under the heading of someone who sells Zaroine Gino, knowing that these Zaroine Gino are faulty, and knowing that the person intended to have expenditure as a result of that, and that would be a way of Mechaimim. But where he acted in good faith, then Lechayra would have to look at Rebbe Kiva Eger, and would have to look at the Maharik. I'll just finish off with a Dvar Torah that you can say over at the Shabbos table. This is was a bit heavy. And yeah, I don't know if you say over your Shabbos table by all means, yeah? This week's Pasha, as we know, deals with the beginning of the Makkos of the Mitzrayim. And the first Makkah the Pasha opens up with is Makkah's Dam. Now there is a Pasuk there, which is the Mefarshim Shtelon. What the Pasuk is doing here. That Moshe turned the water into blood. Biyasukin Chatum Mitzrayim. Vayechzak Leparev Lo Shoma Aleim. Parev was not interested. Vayivim Parev Vayove El Beisoy Lo Shos Liboy Gavnazois. He turned away, he went home. Lo Shos Liboy Gavnazois. Now, there are two, on this pasuk that Pari turned his house and did not pay attention, there are two polar pshotim, two extremes. Number one, the Maral Diskin. The Maral Diskin says, on this pshat, that Pari was debating here whether Moshe Rabbeinu was really some spiritual supreme power, or was he kishuf like anyone in between were. He might have been an extremely good magician, he might have been extremely good, very powerful, but not a supreme spiritual power. So Moshe Rabbeinu turned water to blood. His Chartumim did the same. Fine. Says the Maril Diskin, Shuleib Diskin, Ala Torah, that Kishuv is limited in its power. Kishuv only works on something which is in front of a person. You can't affect something at the end of the world through Kishuv. So Parai would have had the test. You see Parai turning it into water. You see the Chartum turning it into Mitzrayim. You come home, and you see the water at home is dam. So what's going on here? That's not Kishuv. But even Parai, by Yovel Beisoy, he came home, and he saw at home was also dam. And after he came, because of rishos of Parai, the whole economy is collapsing. The whole Egyptian finances was structured around the Nile, the water. Ochosi becomes this. But the Meshech Chochmah has a pshat which is completely different. The Meshech Chochmah's pshat is, as follows, he says, we know from the Medrashim that the Yidden had water. And we know that the Mitzrayim had to buy the water of the Yidden. And when they paid Yid for the water, it stayed water. If they didn't pay, it turned to blood. It says, Paroi had brought up Moshe Rabbeinu all these years in his house. And never charged Moshe Rabbeinu. Not for lodgings, not for food, no rent, no heating bills, no council tax bills. Pari had already paid everything to Moshe Rabbeinu. Pari was in tremendous amount of credit. It's when Pari came home, he says everything was water. And I'll tell you something, I saw the special chukwa, I got a bit of a shock, because it's a huge chiddush. Pari came home, and it's not a pasuk that one always learns, and the ma'isa, I saw the new meshach chukwa was on the sign, there's a mekoy for it in a medrash, that when Pari came home in his house, there was a water, because of, he had paid for the upbringing of Moshe, that has a payment for the water. Vayifen Pari, Vayodah Abesha, he came home and he sees water, he says, Moshe's a fake. Shkoyach. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you.